Titans, Mike Fortson made a big difference.
Good.
I mean, you're picking up everything. No, good. This is good. I mean,
it's not rolling.
No.
No. Because you like to keep things all nice and tight. Welcome.
Oh, my goodness.
Welcome, Jason, to the basement.
Or we could welcome people to our podcast.
With that voice.
I know. I think today is not the best day for me
okay.
to be welcoming people right. to my basement.
So I'll go ahead and take back that responsibility yes. today. All right. Welcome, everyone, to Three Things Podcast.
Hello.
Yes. And it is recorded in our basement.
Yes, it is.
There we go. So we gave that away.
It's a little chilly down here.
We gave people a little peek behind the curtain on the show.
Like the Wizard of Oz.
Right. So I don't know kind of what to say, Christina, in that, first of all, we're getting our second show out this month. So that's a win.
We're getting back on track.
That's kind of a win because we haven't been doing that for a minute.
Easter season stuff.
Right. And we probably need to do mention... your voice.
Yes, this is not normal.
So anyway, her voice is about gone, so this will be an interesting night.
So I will try not to talk much.
That'll be
it's always hard for me.
There's the understatement of the year. So anyway, we're good. But we have a really neat guest in
yes.
our basement tonight.
So. I'm pretty excited. So there are so many questions I have too, but remember, I'm not going to talk tonight. So,
write them down. yeah.
So I am happy to have Katie Candelino on in our basement, on our couch.
Yes. Welcome, Katie.
Welcome,
Thank
Katie.
You. Thank you.
Katie, introduce yourself to, just give us the quick rundown.
All right. I am Katie Candelino. I know you guys through John Paul II Parish.
Yeah.
And I think Jason and I met first through our good gracious confirmation and youth group many moons ago.
Long time ago.
Yeah.
Oh, that, yeah. You used to be part of the infamous confirmation retreats that we had with
yes, the, Ken with the, and the flags.
The capture of the flag.
Holy smokes, that was madness. Absolute madness, but such fun. And I was like, oh, everyone lived. No one broke an arm. There was no ambulance here this weekend.
Kids we got close.
Praise the Lord. Probably, so. Yeah. But it was fun. Those were fun days. I have lived in Idaho Falls almost 11 years. Came from South Carolina by way of North Carolina and grew up in Virginia. So I took a few steps before I got here. My
East Coast girl.
Oh, yeah. I love it out here, but I miss things about the East, like proper restaurants, Southern food,
public transportation.
Yes, I grew up outside of DC, and that was one of our favorite things was the metro.
Right.
And just getting on and going, and it's pretty neat to be able to just, my best friend and I used to go sit under the tower at Dulles Airport and watch planes take off mm-hmm. with McDonald's. And then other nights we would go to, we just drive to DC and walk around the Washington Monument,
yeah.
sit around. It's pretty great. To just live somewhere interesting.
So you do, but you, I'm going back to you like it out here more.
Yeah. I met Rob, my husband, in Charleston, South Carolina. CatholicMatch.com, shout out.
That's not funny. That's really how it happened.
It is. My brother met his wife there. It's pretty great. Anyway, so I met him out there, and I am a beach person through and through. I love the ocean. Salt water is so healing and lovely. And then he had an opportunity to come out here for work. Same company, different position. And I was like, okay. Rather be out there with you than here without you. So let's do this. And we came on our house hunting trip. We got here Easter Sunday. We had done the Easter vigil. I was sponsoring a girl in confirmation, and it was 90 degrees on Easter, Holy Saturday. So we got on a plane, came out here Sunday, and it was like 50 when we landed. And I thought, all right.
Yeah. And that was a warm day.
Yeah.
That was a warm
Easter. Yes.
That was a balmy Easter night almost.
Yep. And we were at the Shiloh, and I looked out at the island there on the river, and there was a pelican. And I thought, we're good. There's water. the pelicans are still here, and I haven't seen a pelican out there since. So I knew that was a little. I mean, I know they're at the zoo and stuff, and they're migrate and up at Market Lake and everything. Sure. But to see one right there on the snake,
yeah,
in town,
like he was resting,
and I've not seen it again. So I think that was a little Holy Spirit moment.
A lot of times they're floating.
Mm-hmm. You
know, well, but Yellowstone, but not. She's right. I don't see them a lot down here.
Eastman Massacre.
Well, actually, guess what? Let me tell you a little secret pelican spot. Gem Lake Dam on the other side. So you got to access it on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what I'm talking about with Gem, that, yes, that very lower power plant,
mm-hmm,
the control dam.
Yes.
And you park on the side and then you go on to the other side of the dam where the outlet is.
Mm-hmm.
And we did this, we you know, you get bored during COVID, right? During lockdown. Yep. And we drove out there, and there was a couple pelicans out there fishing.
That's cool.
So I don't know how often they're out there, but you'll might be worth checking out.
Yeah.
See how the pelicans.
So tell me what a proper restaurant is.
There's only one of them. That sounds so snobby.
Took me a minute just to get it.
I just mean, yeah, like, not a chain. So the wait staff is usually, like, they know what they're doing. When you ask them what's on tap, they're not saying things like, I don't know.
What's beer?
Yes. And then just, I don't know, like, there's a feel about a restaurant that's somebody had an idea and is, you know, busting their butt trying to make it happen and feed people.
It's more than just,
I love food.
Bringing people in and seeing how many written meals you can cook in a night and throw them out.
Stay on the turn and burn. I used to wait tables and I used to get in trouble for like keeping tables so long. And I'm like, just these people are paying a bunch of money to come eat. Can we please visit? But
I got stories I want to tell.
I know. Or just let them. I don't know. You know, I love talking and I love food. And there's something about a good, just a unique restaurant. That sounded really snotty when I said there's only one of them.
No.
But
what's your favorite? Just here.
Here, do y'all remember, oh goodness, it was on, it's now like the tourist office on the river by Snow Eagle. Was it Republic?
Oh, I remember that place.
It was short-lived, but it was like tapas, and they had fried green tomatoes, and they had shrimp and grits, so that was our go-to. Lately, we went to the Cast Iron. I don't even know if it's still open, but that was tremendous. So good.
We tried Mama Flaw's this last
week. Ooh.
So you've been there?
Yes.
Okay. What was your favorite? What'd you order?
Oh, gosh. I get something every single time different, but my favorite is the, I'm going to try this, Amatriciana.
Oh.
It's got like bacon and.
I saw that on the menu. Yeah.
It's good. It's a red sauce and it's really nice. I think they have a bolognese too. That's really good.
Yeah.
Yes, when my in-laws were here at Thanksgiving, they had just kind of opened and were going full on. And so we went because they're from Italy and my father-in-law is first generation American. And yeah.
So Candelina's Italian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My father-in-law one time told me, if anybody ever gives you any problems, you tell them your last name ends with a vowel now. I'm like, oh, yes. It was like, I don't even know. It was just something silly. I was having a hard time with somebody returning phone calls, and he's like, you tell him your last name ends with a vowel now. I love it. Anyway, so it was good, and he, you know, chatted with the owner, and they're real sweet.
Hey, we interrupted though a little bit. You're married.
Mm-hmm. I am.
And you have some babies. You have some children.
I do.
Okay, that's cool.
They're keepers.
Well, I'm glad.
Yes.
I know.
Got to pick them.
I know. Yeah, that's true.
Can you imagine somebody says, well, I've got one that's a keeper. But the other three, I just want to shake to the side.
I don't know. I used to, with our four kids, I'd always used to say, you know, one of you is my favorite. And they'd always ask which one. And I'd say, whichever one cost me the least amount of money this week. The least expensive child is
the
my
race
favorite.
Is on.
Yeah. Whoever can cost, you know.
I will tell you, there were times Jason would literally throw a fit in this house about electricity use. I mean, I didn't think I would ever become that. But here I am worried about, oh my gosh, a light is on or off or whatever.
I am that way. I think I drive Rob insane.
Oh.
I'll just go behind him and
turn. It would drive me nuts. I'm like, you guys are supposed to be the generation that cares about penguins, and here you are killing. You know how many penguins are dying because that light was left on in your room all day?
You know, meanwhile, they're six, you know.
But think of, like, how do parents now do it with all the chargers? My God.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. It's fight over chargers.
Oh,
we had fights over TVs. Plus, yeah. Mm-hmm. We had fights over TVs with our kids.
Or the
And now it's fight over charger. Right. Well, Katie, we're so glad you're here, and we're excited about the conversation. So let's just jump into, what are you drinking?
I am drinking 10 Barrel, I think it's called, yes. And it's just called pub beer. And I had it the first time at Deanne and Andrew's house, mm-hmm. and it was so good. It's like bougie Coors Light. It's nice. Yes.
There you go.
It's regionally made, and I love good beer.
I remember. Over the top, I know this about you. Yeah, you do. You do have a beer palate.
I would love to think so. But, I mean, I'm not going to turn down a Coors Light or a Miller Light. That's my fishing beer. I don't know. I think it's really neat. Especially around here, the hops and the barley and the. We are surrounded by quality beer ingredients, and there's no excuse to make a terrible beer.
Right. So where did that start? How did this beer, where did it start from?
I don't even know, because I didn't really like beer at all. I was the girl at the parties in college drinking...
Bartles and James?
Well, Boone's Farm.
Boone's. Even cheaper.
And 97 cents at the Walmart. What do you call it? Hornsby cider, which was not 97 cents a bottle. Yeah. But you can't drink six of those and maintain. No. So I learned that.
Just the sugar content alone will kill you, right?
So it was, I don't know. I think I've lived at the beach in North Carolina for a long time. And that was just kind of like after work, you get a beer. Or you all go out and have beers. And that was, like I said, my fishing beer. It was always Coors Light or Miller Light. And then they opened a brew pub. And that was where I discovered, there's real beer.
Right.
And then Fat Tire trickled out that way and had a blue paddle, and I thought, well, that was really good. New Belgium. I always it's all Fat Tire to me. New Belgium.
Sure.
But the Fat Tire and Blue Paddle, and what are you drinking?
It's Party Foul. What did I do there?
Oh, nothing. Oh, dear.
You know, it's unfortunate. I'm not going to be able to edit that out. I you know, well, we've had, Lyle on the show. Yes. Lyle, Mary Lyle makes his own. And we've had many people on our show with refined beer palates.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Lyle looked at me funny, I think, on the first time. Was like, you know, I told him I started drinking Bud Light when I was 15. Why change now?
Because Jason,
we
get older.
I know, right? I get that,
but Bud Light Lime is so good.
That's our summer beer, by the way.
I love it.
But you know, it's true. Like the birth of the microbrew, right, and has really changed beer, and is really kind of. What do I know? I'm an old man. I don't know a lot of stuff. But I think it also gave permission to have, you know, the one or two glass beer, right? You know, when you, at least growing up in Wyoming as a kid, your goal wasn't to have two beers and enjoy the taste.
Yeah. There was never a moment where you went, wow, I really like the taste of this.
A little swirl.
You know, two glasses.
Where was this just made, you know?
This pairs so nicely with my cheeseburger. You know, I mean, never.
Were these... beer nuts on the bar.
Doritos.
Or the pickled eggs.
Oh, eggs.
You know, so I think what, in a way, craft beer makers has given permission to people to enjoy the taste of beer and not just, you know.
Pound
the beers. But I'm sure, you know.
I mean.
You know, Beer Fest, I guess, is coming up in a couple of weeks. I'm sure.
Yeah, are you going to go to that?
Probably not.
Have you gone before?
Yeah, I've been a couple times. And I kind of got into that, like, taste all the beers.
Yeah. Oh,
and before you know it, there's 15 tents and you've had all varieties of every brewery. And you're like, oh, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
And I'm sunburned.
That's great.
And I'm dusty. And I'm tired.
Can I please eat?
And all I've had was a pretzel.
Yes. It is fun. It's definitely a place to try out. I don't have a lot of discipline, so I'll just stay home probably. I do just love to try them all. It's fascinating to me how different one beer can be from the next, one brewery to the next, and then the science behind it really got me interested. Because Rob brews.
Oh, he does.
He used to a lot, and then parenting.
Yeah. All the fun things you like to do are gone.
Yes. And then he learned how to do the, with the, the whole grains and the, I'm having a brain cramp. Were you batch sparging and all, like, he does it start to finish. Like, he would order the all the oats and all the malt and all the everything and then do it. And it's so time consuming.
Right. He, no pre-made kits.
Yeah.
He
would go right. And he did all of that. And then he read about doing, my engineer, he read about it and found out about it and liked to research it. And then we did it.
Yeah.
So we did a couple batches. And then there's no supplies here anymore. I don't know where people get them.
Oh, yeah. That little place shut closed. Down.
I love that store. It was so cool. Park Avenue.
Yeah.
Mercantile.
Yeah.
It was neat. But anyway, the science behind it is really neat. I think wine is... I'm not picky. And I used to love a cocktail, but it's really hard to get a cocktail around here.
Right?
I don't know.
A good cocktail.
A good, yeah.
I get good ones in Boise.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Boise.
We were on, do you remember, it's not around here. So we were on vacation in Mexico and we snuck into the exclusive bar on a resort that we had really no business in, but because we're just goofballs. And hey, how's it going, everybody? Yay!
When in Mexico.
So we sidled up to the bar and I ordered a whiskey sour. And this was the first whiskey sour I've had probably, he knew what he was doing. Sour mix. It wasn't
so on this big complex. Then Jason's consistently hunting for this bar,
right?
And this bartender.
It's like, right? I need that whiskey sour.
This guy, and then his other favorite guy was the guy who made him the cafe con leche in the morning.
No, it wasn't in the morning, it was at night.
Because
we wanted to stay up and dance, and getting past 9 p.m. just doesn't work for me. So I'd eat dinner, drink a bunch of wine, and then I'd go get me a cafe con leche. And then that would fire me right up, and I could get to 10:30.
And then he's like,
all out.
But no, you're exactly right, right? It's kind of hard. This town is interesting. It is interesting.
And I mean, it's not really a commentary or anything. It's just very different than... anywhere I've ever lived.
How did you adapt to that at first?
I mean, I tried to remember that I don't know all I think I know about everything.
There you go. Right.
It's really hard for me. It was just kind of like, okay, well, let's, we had our group of friends that Rob worked with, and a lot of them, came from other places. Mm-hmm. So we were all in the same boat and would, we had a couple times where people would come over and we'd cook out and brew and,
isn't that seasonally,
and it's just fun.
It's the community within the community.
Yes.
Right? Because I think that's kind of Christine and I's story. We moved here in 96. Mm-hmm. Christina, your famous story. She went to get her license. You went to get your driver's license picture, and she was wearing a cross. Mm-hmm. And the deputy snapping the photo said, oh, you're another. And it was that conservative, that uniquely.
It was actually 94.
So. 1994. Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, so that then, of course, when you get here, you have to find that community within a community, mm-hmm. right? You have to find, and we knew a lot of people who couldn't take it. They had to move out.
But I think lately I've noticed along the same lines of what you're seeing, and our son, one of our sons has been upset about this, that our town keeps building apartments, building houses, mm-hmm. building more of that. But it's not building anything else. So you're not getting those restaurants or those pubs or those mm-hmm. places to go or things to do. Mm-hmm. It's like you're going to have all these people and then nothing to do.
Right. And it's putting the horse before the cart, I think. It's mind-boggling. Everywhere I go, I'm like, that's an apartment complex.
Right.
And I think it's nice that they are now realizing that there are also single folks coming and couples coming and starting homes, and that's okay. Yes, more affordable housing. Ah. Uh-huh. And it's Yeah, but they're not doing anything.
Yeah. So it'll be just, what, another Pizza Hut or another Red Robin or something.
Let's hope.
Yeah. And when we first came out here, we went to Chili's because it was right there and we knew it and it was easy and it was good. And then we went to Snake Bite and I was like, okay, we might be okay.
Yeah.
And then little bits and pieces like that. And we were talking with another couple that moved right after us from Charleston. And like, why is it this way? Why is it chain after chain after chain? It's because there's so many families here, which mm-hmm. I love and is awesome. But who can take the family out to these unique,
expensive,
and it's hard to go on a date if you have even, you know, two kids. So by the time you have dinner and a babysitter and the whole nine, it's like.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. You know, even in when our kids were young and old enough that we could. You know, we had our older ones in teenage years, so we could actually go out on a date night. You know, you had to schedule mm-hmm. with the kids and figure out who was going to be home. I mean, we just snuck to Olive Garden.
Yeah. Sat at the bar.
So we
didn't have to ask for a table.
We just sat at the bar because the bar top was always open.
Mm-hmm.
So we sat at the bar top. We got to know the bartender really good.
That's awesome.
She kept wine just for us. Now, that also tells you how regular we were, you know, that, you know, she could stuff a bottle for us. But, you know, it got to be like, I think it was every Wednesday night after Wednesday nights, we'd go out and we usually go out late, like at 7:30, and we'd just sit at the bar top. It wasn't about the food.
Right.
And I wouldn't even say it was about the wine. It was just nice to have a glass of wine.
Yes.
It was just about her and I having conversation. Entirely by ourselves without kids tugging at her.
Brilliant. Glorious.
I will say that Pechanga's downtown.
Yes.
They've got a great margarita.
Okay. So noted.
I've had a hard time finding a good one. And the other day I looked at the girl and I'm like, this is the best one I've had.
Nice.
Thank you.
Good, good.
Well, Christine, what are you drinking? Because I'm not.
Well, what were you drinking?
I was drinking my Spencer margarita. And then I decided to throw it on the ground.
You're an adult.
Take that, Spencer. Love you, Spence.
I love the margarita, Spence. So I'm just going to throw it on the ground. So anyway.
I started with fizzy water. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now I'm drinking wine. It's called The Convert. It's a red blend. And it has the owl on the front. I really like the bottle. Mm-hmm. But it's a good wine, although I really can't taste it.
No, it probably just
right now. It just tastes like not water,
and it feels a little different.
Yeah, a little temperature change there.
Katie, what are you reading?
Oh my gosh, I just finished. There's a little juxtaposition here. I usually have an audiobook going and a real book. That's so terrible. A book that I can feel in my hand and watch get smaller from one side to the next.
Right, you can actually
the best part.
Feel the reward of spending. I gotcha. Yes.
So on Libby, or the app through the library, I just finished Dave Grohl's Storyteller.
Is that good?
Yes.
Is it really?
And he reads it. So that was the kicker. I was like, I'll just read this. And then I was like, he's narrating.
You are the second person to tell me about this. And I heard that because he reads it, you feel like you're his best friend now.
Yes. And you really get he's so humble in the aspect of, I am one of the world's largest rock stars. I was in the band that knocked Michael Jackson off the charts.
Right.
And he still is stunned when people ask him to play. Like, he played Blackbird at the Oscars for this tribute and he told him no. And his little daughter Violet said, Dad, why? That's your favorite song. It's the Beatles.
Yeah.
You're Dave Grohl. And he was so scared to do it and didn't want to destroy the song. And then he saw Paul McCartney and was like, oh, I guess he had dinner with Paul McCartney and told him that they were friends and he was gonna read it. So just the humility of how huge this man is.
Mm-hmm.
And he still gets excited when he sees his favorite musicians or that when he gets to play with them. Or I got to laughing. It's like every few chapters, he's like, they were my favorite growing up. And it's all these people that he meets. Also, he's from Northern Virginia.
Okay.
where I grew up, and I'm listening to him talk about working at Shakey's Pizza in Springfield. I texted my aunt and I was like, didn't you guys used to take us to Shakey's in Springfield when we were kids? And she was like, yeah, it was right there on Route 1. Dave Grohl waited on me at Shakey's when I was 3.
Oh, that's awesome.
I don't know if that's true or not, but
I say go with it.
My story and I'm sticking to it.
It is now. It is a true story now.
So it was neat to kind of walk down that memory lane and of his journey into Nirvana. There's lots behind the things that you see that mm-hmm. you don't understand what people are going through and mm-hmm. what's their joys and what's their hardships and what's their what is going on moments. And it's neat to have somebody who is, again, so huge right. and well known.
Well,
Katie, be a human.
You are right up my alley. Because that's all I read is biographies and nonfiction, and now I'm going to have to check that book out.
It's really good. I used to be a fiction, and I was laughing. I was listening to Mary and the nonfiction, and I have kind of like, well, the scales have balanced, okay. I guess, more. I haven't gone to the other side quite yet. I love fiction. I love a story. I love listening to it and just the characters and knowing them. And then the audiobook has changed that for me. Like, I can get through a whole nonfiction book and be interested because somebody's telling me, and I feel like I can absorb it more when my audio is real. That's kind of my learning style. Mm-hmm. And the Book Nerd Challenge, which I love that you guys are doing it. Yes.
Yes.
Good. That has helped me. I've done it. Well, I've tried for like 6 years and I've done it twice.
Okay.
This is my third year. Well, I tried it many years. I did it the last 2 years, and then this year I'm trying to do all Catholic books.
Oh my
goodness. It's
hard
to find them.
Ooh,
I know they're out there, but I'm like, ooh, I'm going to talk to y'all and find out.
All right, we're going to have that conversation. Okay. Can I just ask you for just a minute? So,
yes.
Have you done the one where they pick the categories for you?
Yes.
You have.
I've done those. And that has what, because the gal, when I first signed up the very first time, she said, we love it when people do this because the point is to help get people out of their reading habits.
No, comfort zone.
No, non-fiction.
Whereas Jason wants just one type.
Yeah. But then it's like Alex Award winner, which is fun because I'm like, ooh, what's that? So I find out that it's this young adult. I think, is it, you know, the young adult category. And then I'm like, well, what young adult Catholic books? So I'm going just, yeah. Some of them are fiction. Some of them are not. And then I've come across a lot that are just Christian. Just Christian, but not
Catholic
focused. And there, so it's been neat.
So what qualifies for you as a Catholic book? Written by a Catholic, about Catholicism, about
or
doctrine,
published.
Or what?
Yeah, well, I was thinking, I was including written by a Catholic.
Okay.
And I've read a bunch of Ann Patchett novels lately, which I also really, really enjoy. And she's Catholic.
Did you read Bel Canto?
That was my last one, and I've listened to all of hers, and I just read it, and I'm still like just so touched by that book.
Yeah,
really,
it was amazing, and it was beautiful, and her writing is gorgeous, and she's just amazing. But I keep coming across these authors that they're Catholic, and all they do is rip the church or talk about the Eucharist or do, and I'm like, okay, I'm done. And you could tell that they have not had a good history with the church.
Oh, okay.
Which is fine with, like, it's not like if you're not a part of the church and you aren't happy, then I don't want to read you. But I'm just,
you don't want to read that all the time. And
yes,
I get you.
So I'm trying, I guess my point of all of that is to, of how I want to do the challenge is I keep, first of all, lending time to other things that I should probably be, I don't know, saying a rosary instead of reading again. Or there's little things, and I'm like, there's so much learning that I want to do about the church and about my faith and about the history and about controversy or other people's viewpoints versus Catholicism that I feel like, well, here's my opportunity. Surely I can find 50 books on.
I think you could, but probably they'll be nonfiction.
Yes,
you know, the majority.
Yes, a lot of them, yeah.
Unless you go to books that talk about faith, but maybe aren't a Catholic author.
Right, and I've done a couple of those. Like my Pulitzer Prize winner was Gilead by Marion. It was interesting.
Hmm.
I haven't read that one, but I feel like I own it.
That was good. I have a few of those.
Which was 95% of the reason why we decided to do the book challenge this year. Because we're
just
kind of, we gotta stop buying books. Mm-hmm. It's just gotta stop.
So earlier you said that you read A Prayer for Owen Meany.
Yes.
Now, would you put that into your Catholic? I mean, it's really not, but it has some faith.
Yeah, some faith and the themes, anything that's like running where you could take it back to a faith or a practice or a religious history. Yeah, I really like that. And there was a little bit of, I'm trying to remember if it was mentioned as Catholicism, because I feel like the grandmother, oh gosh, I can't remember. It's been like 2 years and I'm terrible at retaining information.
I can't remember.
But there was like Our Lady, there were some Marian references and Owen Meany.
He collected some things.
The nuns, obviously. That's so the big glaring one at the end.
So then, then it was Catholic Church. It was a Catholic Church they went to, yeah.
I think so.
That was a good book.
It was a good book.
So have you read Flannery O'Connor?
Yes.
Have you read all of her stuff?
I have not. I read a bunch. I took a Southern Reading class in college years and years and years ago.
That would be so great.
Yes, because I was an English major and I was going to teach high school English. And then I was like, okay, I don't like reading anymore. Because I don't just get to do it and say whatever I want and somebody's going to grade me on it. And then I was like, oof, I just don't know. And my time management skills are less than desirable. So writing a paper every 8 days is just not where I am. So I took a Southern Lit class and it was really good. But Flannery O'Connor was on that list. And of course, it was in a Methodist school. So it was maybe 5 years ago that I realized that she was very Catholic.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I got to go back and do that again.
Yeah. Her Catholicism comes out in different ways in her stories. Yeah. So it's not like, oh, here's a Catholic church or here's a priest.
Right.
It's about grace and sin. And
Yeah.
What's the one, the
A Good Man Is Hard to Find.
Yes, that's the one I've read that probably 5 times and I just think, ooh.
And then, okay, so I've forgotten the title, but it's the one where
the lady in the dentist office,
she has pigs, she raises pigs. Never mind. I won't talk about it.
I know what you're talking about, though, and I'm the same.
And she's just a horrible woman.
Yes.
Yeah. And then she has a vision about all the people going, marching to heaven. And she sees that the people that she's been picking on will be the first. Right. And imagine. Then she will have to take a spot at the end. Right. And I'm like, I mean, it's not overt. It's just kind of, it could be any faith.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. There is such a magical talent to being able to do that and portray it and just the subtlety, but the clarity of it is amazing.
I think for me, I think the word just this real sense of authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I have a tough time just with fiction in general.
Right.
Is that like right now I'm reading a book called A Backpack, A Bear, and 8 Cases of Vodka.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about this kid and his family's escape from Ukraine.
Oh, wow.
Or escape is the wrong word. Khrushchev came in, right? Khrushchev was the one with the birthmark on his head.
That's Gorbachev.
Gorbachev came in the late 80s, early 90s. And there was a brief window which he allowed Russian Jews to emigrate out of Russia. And it turned to like 2 million Jews. And it was one of these things like 8,000, 17,000, 50,000, 2 million, like in subsequent years, right? And so this kid tells this story. He was a child at the time, 10 years old. And now he, as an adult, he's going back and telling the story of him and his family emigrating out.
Wow.
It's a fantastic story. It's... you know, and he's very candid in the book. You know, Russian, you know, he wasn't a Russian Jew. He wasn't a Jew by practice, a Jew by heredity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by that time in Eastern Bloc countries, you know, religion had been eliminated. Mm-hmm. They didn't even have Jewish, they were just the Jews, right?
They had no religion.
They had no, didn't know how to practice, right? And yet they were being, you know, constantly, you know, persecuted, and he was being beat up in school and his family. And I mean, they, you know, just because they were Jews, but they had no, they didn't practice any because they didn't know him. It was 2 generations separated.
That's amazing.
Yeah. His grandfather and grandmother had, you know, escape the Nazis. And then, you know, then Stalin moves in and quashes it all. And so by the time he's born. But anyway, going back to this authenticity, I think this is what I'm really loving about this book, is there's just this real authenticity to their stories, to his discussion about faith. And going back to, you know, your Catholic books, Flannery O'Connor, there's an authenticity to it, right? I think sometimes I have a problem with certain recent popular authors who tend to put out a book every month and then send you a box of books and tell you to give them to every Catholic, you know, but we won't mention any names.
It may or may not be on my list of books.
I've read them, you know, you sign up an ambassador, you get 85 books and you got to give them to 85 people and pretty soon no one wants to hang out with you anymore. But, you know, sincere as those books are, and as I think is appropriate and applicable and as beneficial and all of those words that you could say that help you in your faith journey, what lacks for me in those types of books is a sense of authenticity. Mm-hmm. In other words, I'm living in the muck, right? We've got marriage issues. We've got kid issues. We've got job issues. We've got money issues. And yet, you know, I have this faith. And how do I live the faith in the midst of all the muck and the mire and the grime? And to me, sometimes that's where I get...
Because it's not easy.
That's where I get real frustrated with these Catholic books.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my two bit for the day.
Oh, I agree with that, because I struggle to get into books like that, but I read them because I think there's something in everyone. Yes. But the ones that I have read of a certain author I have in mind have all been kind of a different way to put the same story.
Tell something new.
A little bit superficial. I'm like, go deep. Don't just tell me it's going to be okay. And don't just tell me that you had a hard time. Like the last one I read, I'm thinking, okay, you got to tell us what happened now.
Right?
Like what happened that you were like ready to just check out?
Yeah, it's all very, it almost, I feel it's prescriptive. So yes,
that's a very good way to put it.
They have a nice little, you know, binder and it's time to write a new book. So I'm going to open my binder.
Yep.
And I'm going to follow chapter one, chapter two, the whole thing. Here's my list of platitudes.
Yeah.
Whenever I want one, I need a filler. Let me just pop one in. You know, and I like how you said never goes deep. It just never goes deep. And so I always struggled in my fourth days when we would take a book on that I would really love to like take Screwtape Letters and go really hard and deep with that.
Yeah.
But that is not what everybody enjoys. They would much rather have Life is Messy or something else, you know, and they find great things in it. It's just not for me.
And I think some people, or sometimes in most of our lives, those books are exactly what we need.
Sure.
At that minute. But like to just get by on those, you have to go deep with the Screwtape Letters.
Yeah.
And with that's another one I'm just getting into is C.S. Lewis.
Yeah.
I never read the Chronicles of Narnia until last summer.
Oh, really?
And I'm hooked.
You didn't read when you were a kid, like junior high?
No. And I remember, like, the middle school, when I was in elementary school, the local middle school put it on as a play. And I actually knew the story and I saw the movie. And, you know, when I got older, when it came out, and I was enamored. And every one of them fit probably a third of the categories in the book nerd that year.
Oh, right.
So I was like, here's seven. So, and I knew he was an author and that he wrote other stuff, but I didn't realize how many books he had. Because we did the Screwtape Letters. I'd done that. I just read Mere Christianity this fall, and they're just good and they make you think, and they're all different. The Blue Planet, or Out of the Blue Planet, and I'm on
that one. I don't know.
It's fascinating. It's just cool. Great Divorce.
Yeah, The Great Divorce.
Anyway, I interrupted you, but there is just some depth, and there are times where I just, whatever's going on in my life or how tired I am or if I'm sad or happy or whatever's going on, sometimes I can grab onto them and really go. And then other times I just think my mind cannot do this right now. I don't want to do this right now because I'm a hot mess and I need the life is messy.
You do, right?
Sometimes I've found, so Father Hugh at the monastery once did a homily, and he included a poem by Mary Carr. And then I went, I found him. I'm like, tell me about this lady. I've been searching for this poem. And so I often just buy these poetry books. That's and neat. Then I think when I'm struggling, instead of picking up one of those easy books, I'll take a poetry book, and then I can just, a poem is easy to absorb. Yeah. And then you read it again, and then you your mind wanders, right?
Yeah.
But I think for me, those are easier for me to just kind of find some sort of meaning on one page, and then turn the page, and it's a whole different topic.
By the way, if you remember that name,
okay.
If you ever jump into any of her work, you're gonna wanna eat it up.
Okay.
She has a great story. Well, the great story is the wrong. It's inappropriate. She has an inspiring story, and it's very challenging, and she has lived a very authentic faith, and I love her poetry.
Mary Carr. It sounds very familiar to me. I feel like I can see it. Two R's?
Yeah,
I can see it written recently. Okay.
So I could go on and on, but one more book that I absolutely love is by Graham Greene.
Yeah.
The Power and the Glory.
I want to read it.
I've got a copy. Do you want it?
Yes, please.
Okay. I'll give you that.
All right.
And then you tell me what you think. Melissa and I once did that book for a Lent book club at church.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And people were excited, and whoa, they didn't come back. And so the final one, Melissa and I sat together, and we talked about the book.
Hey.
But I love that book, and I teach it with my students. This year I didn't, but I have in the past.
She is the one who told me about him, because I think she taught that book, or one of his. And I read a book of his, and I cannot remember what it's called, but they were in Africa, and they were building a hospital. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't remember the name.
I think it was Graham Greene. Anyway, it was good.
But he's another man that has an incredible faith journey story.
That I'll have to check it out.
That inspired him to write in that manner to talk about those issues.
Yeah, neat.
Well, I guess I'm giving you credit. Sticking to the Catholic authors, now that's a challenge.
I mean, I'm trying.
No, don't give up. You know, and yeah, maybe we'll keep an eye out and start firing you off.
Thank you.
I can send you some really horrible ones, like the biography of St. Jerome, and that'll pretty much make you want to, your eyes.
You'll fall asleep. There's a good one. Yeah. Oh, I can't sleep. Let me open St. Jerome.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Right. No. That's
yeah, usually I'll listen to one at night because my mind calms, and I can just focus on one thing, and then I fall asleep in 15 minutes. Yeah, so I love an audiobook to fall asleep. So thanks anyway, but no St. Jerome.
So when you listen to your audiobook, does Rob have to listen to it too?
I do headphones.
Rob's over there going,
I wish every night. Yeah. I know.
Well, I read 50 books this year too.
I know. Well, and it's funny too because he has to get up at 4:30 and get on the bus by 5:15 and go out there. And so I've always been like, I cannot go to sleep at 9:30, especially when you live in Idaho and it is light.
Right.
So lately that's kind of been my, I will go to bed, and if I fall asleep, awesome. If I don't, and I don't do it every single night, but more often than not.
In Virginia at 9:30 at night in the summer.
Dark.
Are you kidding?
No. But we have lightning bugs. I miss that.
My whole life, this is how sheltered I am from Wyoming, Montana, Idaho. That's my triangle. I guess I thought that everybody feels the same thing that I do, just at different times. So if it's 9:30 and it's light out here, if I go to Florida, it's 9:30 and it's light.
Well,
we went
to
Hawaii, it was dark at 7:15. I'm like,
no, ma'am.
It's August. Why is it dark? I could not figure it out.
The equator.
Well, that's true.
Equator, Christina. We are far from the equator.
Virginia's not by the equator.
But it's southern latitude compared to where we're at.
And I also grew up on the coast, so
the sun
is long gone.
Long gone.
Comes up early.
It's just so bizarre.
I know. Well, we came out here the first night we moved out here July 1st. And I was like, why is it still light out?
Right.
Laying in bed going, I'm so tired.
It is hard. It's hard for little kids too.
Oh my gosh.
You need bedtime. It's, mom, the sun is out.
I don't care. It's 9 o'clock. Go to bed.
I know. Shut the shade.
And then it's light at 5 and Bernadette's like, hey, mom. No, no, no. You have 3 hours.
I'm telling you, I don't miss that.
Oh, yeah. Man. It's so funny. I mean, it's the best, but Lord have mercy.
Yeah. Christ have mercy.
Yes.
So kind of skipping on then, you've got to have tons of faith stories. Did you bring any kind of specific?
I do. And I've been like, what should I tell? What should I tell? Or do I just do like the... Let's start and go all the way through. Let's and start. If anybody wants to ask me more,
No, let's start.
Well, I mean, as a kid, church was always.
Yeah, you were raised. You were born Catholic.
Yeah, born and raised.
Was Rob Catholic? Born and raised?
Yes. Yeah. And I it's always just a way of life. We spent a lot of weekends at either one of our grandparents' house, and when we went to Mammal Callahan, my mom's mom. When we went to her house, she was like the one in the kitchen cooking and doing all the banquets and the everything. And it was nothing for four priests to be at her house on, you know, Friday night. And
oh, wow.
It was, they were in and out. And it was like, as long as I could remember, priests being a part of everything, you know, and like being at church long. To this day, when I am in the hall at Christ the King, I just feel like, I'm in the kitchen at the church, just like Mammal Callahan was. And it just feels so neat. And I'm realizing now this obsession I have with feeding people and food and loving it and just wanting to cook for people. It's crazy. I could elaborate, but we don't have time.
No.
It just...
This comes from your grandma.
I think so. And I'm realizing it's a... It must be. She was always cooking. Everyone always had something to eat at her house. It was just, I just can picture her in an apron with a cigarette in her mouth because that's what you did
sure,
in the
course.
80s, 70s, yeah, 80s.
In those funky green kitchens with the orange countertop for micro countertop.
At the dinner table. Yeah. Yes. I remember as a kid looking in the sugar bowl and my grandma, there would be ashes.
Because like, somebody would confuse it for the
ashtray. Yeah, I was like, I'm not eating that sugar.
I will never forget. My uncle, my dad's brother, at my other grandmother's house one weekend, he chews tobacco.
Yeah.
The old Coors yellow can.
Yep.
And there was always two yellow cans next to Uncle Terry. And you know he picked up the wrong one Sunday. And it was like, it's a five-year-old. Like, what just happened to Uncle Terry? So, yeah. So, sugar bowl ashes.
Yeah.
Spit can, beer.
But this is a recent discovery about yourself?
Yeah, and I've always loved having people over and doing dinners. My roommates, you know, when we were, you know, before I was married, just always cooking and dinner, and we'd have the parties and have people over and constantly. And then I love throwing the Kentucky Derby party. And yes. It's like any excuse for people over and food and cake, you know.
Yeah.
Julia Child said, a party without cake is just a meeting. It's one of my favorite quotes. Anyway, we were at the Catholic Women's Conference, and Melissa said, Leah Darrow was the speaker, and she's amazing if you have not listened to her. Anyway, she's pretty fun. She said, if you're one of those people that likes to have the parties and welcome everyone over, you might be a Benedictine. And Melissa looked at me and she said, that's you. Meanwhile, St. Benedict has been stalking me for years. Like, he keeps popping up, and I don't really know much about him except the Benedictine rule in the monastery, sure, but yeah. I've got to stop and just look into him and find out more.
So how is he revealing it? How is he showing up?
He'll just, like, I'll see a prayer card with him on it. Or a quote will show up on Instagram that'll be him. Or it's like, he's constantly, like, I remember, I feel like it was his feast day, and I, you know, looking at the calendar, and I was, oh, it's St. Benedict's feast day. Mm-hmm. And once he was on my mind, and Rob turned on a Bishop Barron episode, and he was talking about the Benedictine rule.
Right.
Okay. So I've it's been before we had Jacob, so at least 6 years, 5 years. It wouldn't stop. So I bought a book at that Catholic shop in Pocatello, and I started it, and I got about a chapter in, and I'm like, I can't focus. I can't do it.
Was it the rule you bought?
No, it was like the life of St. Benedict, or mm-hmm. St. Benedict a life, or something like that. But it's interesting that he's always in the back of my mind, and he keeps showing up. And then when Leah Darrow said that, I thought, huh. And then Melissa said, that's you.
That's you. Right. You needed one other.
I started right. like, maybe. And then I just made that connection about my grandmother and all that. But so I guess church and being in the parish and in the hall and doing all the things without realizing what that was just part of life. So mm-hmm. when we, you know, we always went to church there, my brother and sister and I would play in the confessionals during Mass. Yeah. It's just so funny, all the, just being there. And it was just something you did. This was a part of life. And then we went to, my grandmother died when I was in third grade. And we, you know, then we're in our home parish and more frequently now because we were always at her house and their parish. So it was now like, oh, this is our family. This isn't like just what we're doing because we're at Mamaw's house this weekend. And I just remember watching my parents pray and watching them. And we were, you know, church on Sunday and on holidays people and holy days when we could. And like I said, it was just a way of life and a thing to do because you did it. And that's how it was. And we knew it was important and we knew and we had Santa, but we also knew Jesus and sure. the birth. Like that was at the forefront. And
sure. you knew everything else was just sort of whatever, but the faith was the primary driver.
Yeah.
Did this continue in college?
Not really. Okay, not really.
What happened? Well, what do you mean not really?
Well, it was here, but I wasn't doing it. It was in my mind, and I knew there was something I was looking for, and it just was. And I went to a Methodist school, so there was no Newman Center. There was no. It was yeah. a Shenandoah University in Virginia, super yeah. small. My best friend was there, so I went. I mean, why not, you know? Right. And I had actually gone to a party at Virginia Tech with a friend of mine, and I came home, and the acceptance letter was in the mail, and I was like, nope. I can't do that every weekend. It was like acceptance if I went to summer school. And I thought, okay, I'm working. And that was insanity. I can't do that. Again, no discipline. So I need to keep it small and keep it close to home. So, but I don't know. It's strange. I didn't do First Communion. I didn't do, it was kind of like we did a little bit of CCD and then we kind of stalled out. We were still going to Mass and doing that, but it wasn't. It just sort of stalled out. And then my parents got separated and I graduated high school. And
did you confirm?
Just a bunch of, no. My sister did. My older sister did. She was 3 years older than me. She did and got everything. Well, I say everything. Sure. We were all baptized, but she got, you know, First Communion and confirmation. Then my brother went in college and at the Newman Center through that, I think it was through the Newman Center, he did confirmation. And I'm like floating on the breeze because I don't know. I'm also like, I need to know all the information and I need to understand it and it has to be perfect or I can't do it.
Right.
Which is absurd, but
it's just annoying.
It is annoying. It is annoying.
It's just a terrible personality trait to have.
It is. Yeah. And then, God forbid, I don't know, go learn it. So there's if it that. Just
magically jump in my head by osmosis, then it's not really.
Just not good at the retention.
No, I got you.
But so there was college and then I took a break because I'm like, I don't like English anymore. I don't like reading. I can't because I have to. So I can't, you know. So I took a break and I really, really wanted to write. So I thought I'm going to go. My dream was to go to the beach and in the Outer Banks in North Carolina. I loved it there. We vacationed there. We grew up there. So I wanted to go there, just wait tables, write, get a newspaper job, surf, do the whole thing. Because that's dream realistic, job. You know? Yes. So I was waiting tables, and that's where it stopped, and also drinking lots and lots of beer and just meeting lots and lots of people, and you live at the beach, so every week it's a new crop of people, and sure. isn't this fun? And they go home and then go back to real life, and you get in this cycle of – so then I started realizing all of these people around me are crazy. I don't – like, I can't do this. So I went back to school and taught. Meanwhile, there was a really great church there, and I was a part of that, and I –
Catholic church?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So did you ever attend any other church than the Catholic church? Like not just visit. I mean like start like.
Yes.
So you dabbled your toe in these other faiths?
Oh, like, other faith. No. Other. So I was thinking like other parishes.
No.
I did keep. Once I got to North Carolina, I did go to church, but never. Somebody invited me to like the Christian church. Sure. And I went and I was like, this is Bible study with music. And I'm not trying to knock. I just feel like, okay, no, this is why I go. It just reinforced this is why I go to Mass every weekend. And I don't know how to tell people what joy that is and how amazing and fulfilling it is.
It's hard to explain.
It is hard to explain.
You have to experience it.
You do. And anyway, long story short, I lived at the beach. I had good friends. I was waiting tables. I was making money. But something was missing. And I felt super anxious and super crazy all the time. And I couldn't. I had like a great boyfriend at the time. I met him in church. So aren't we, of course, going to ride off into the sunset and get married?
Right.
No. And then I woof.
Praise the Lord, no.
Yes. My mom is like, thank you, Jesus. So it just, you know, you hear people talk about, or people being the Robert Barons of the world and the deacons and the priests and the masses and all that. Like, when you're looking for something that's missing, it's God, it's the church, it's spirituality, it's whatever. It's true. And I look back now and think that is what was missing. And so I just was kind of kept pushing and going to mass. And I wanted to do confirmation, but I was, you know, not going to be with a stranger to be my sponsor. And I wanted my boyfriend to be my sponsor. And I thought, that's stupid. I can't do that. Well, now I'm so glad that I don't have that hanging over my head. Are you kidding me? So So now I know why they don't let your significant other be your sponsor. Well, don't encourage your significant other to be your sponsor. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't find a job teaching because it was this little tiny town in North Carolina.
And then...
Yes. And so I was substitute teaching, and my best friend that I had met there waiting tables, best girl ever. She's so sweet. We are still best friends, still just tight. We're sisters from another mister. And she moved to South Carolina and said, come with me. I'm like, I can substitute down there if I can't find a job.
Sure.
And I went down there and I thought, oh gosh, this is the place. So I started going to church and I started doing church, not just being there, mm-hmm. you know. And then I met Rob about a year later. And then I thought, oh my gosh,
Wait a minute. What happened to the boyfriend? Did you leave him in North Carolina?
Oh my word.
Well, you don't have to go into details, but I'm assuming you went down to South Carolina.
Yes, I forgot about that kid. So he was very he was a very nice guy, really neat person, very enthusiastic, but like just so over the top. Oh my gosh, so over the top,
dude. Huh?
Yeah, and then also like very Catholic, but not, you know, and I don't know.
Authentic.
He wanted to do things that I was not ready to do. So,
enough.
And just yeah. And just wild and crazy, but went to church on Sunday no matter what. I'm like, you're missing the point. And then there was a giant fight, and he was like, I'm just going to walk home. And I said, if you get out of my car, it's done. And he got out of my car, and I was like, okay.
You're sticking to it.
And there's way more to that. Than,
sure,
it wasn't that easy, but it was.
But my point is, you went to South Carolina with
yes.
free and clear.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So I was still in North Carolina for about a year after that, and then went to South Carolina, and it was like, okay, I can do this. Actually, I had a pet turtle, but I was like commuting back and forth from school I was doing summer school.
What was your turtle's name?
Roxy.
I had one in college named Ahab.
Nice. So we broke up. It was done. It was official. And I went to his house to pick up my turtle and my vacuum cleaner and take it to the house that I had just moved in. I wasn't living with him, but like just kind of a nomad for a little while in Eastern North Carolina.
Things that you think you need. The vacuum
cleaner. I know.
And the turtle.
Principles. So I left his house and I thought, oh my gosh, he is the only other single guy. I met him at church. Like, what do I do now? I just broke up. I just like cut this cord that what bridge did I just burn? And I was like, you got to rein it in. I collect yourself. It is fine. You're going to be okay. And I'm like, okay, I just be a nun. And I went home, and y'all remember MySpace?
Yeah.
I got on MySpace. I like put in a load of laundry, did a stuff, put the turtle away, and I got on MySpace, and there was an ad for Catholic Match. And I thought, what? Meanwhile, my roommate's in her room going, so I'm going to Charleston this weekend to look at this job. Do you want to come with me? So I went down there, and I thought, yes, because there's going to be Catholics everywhere. I don't have to stay here.
Right.
So, yes, that I was like.
And that was the last thought of the nun.
Yes.
You didn't even explore if Benedictine nun was the right way.
No,
because
he wasn't on the radar yet, Benedict. And there was way too much fun still to be had.
Sure.
So. Right. But then I met Rob, and it was, I remember we went to lunch, and I, first of all, like, we went to lunch, and I thought, okay, this is fine. So he didn't get drunk. He didn't tell me a bunch of stupid stories. He wasn't, I knew that Rob was quality when I knew that when my roommates asked me how to go, I wouldn't have to leave anything out or make anything up.
Oh, for their approval.
So, yeah, you know, and I thought, I can actually talk about this date. And one of the things that really just made me laugh and really just warmed my heart about Rob, and I still, like, I don't know what it was, but he said, so I brew my own beer. And I just thought that was so
you're like match
neat. It was so because I wasn't that it was just neat. I just thought, okay, he's sciencey and has the patience to brew his beer. Yeah. And it was just funny how he said it. So,
and then you follow him across the country.
Yeah, we got married. I packed up my classroom, did my last report card. We went on our honeymoon and drove.
Oh, wait, I missed that you're a teacher.
Yes. Well, he was. Well, I don't teach in a classroom anymore. You said you didn't want to read. Well, I teach. I went back for elementary education. Okay. Yes.
I thought you just quit.
No.
I just can sit by the beach and write and art, and I'm like, wow. And then all of a sudden you're teaching? It's okay. It's all right. I got it now.
Yes. So I went back to East Carolina University when I was still living in North Carolina, and education was still kind of in my mind, but I did elementary and I loved it. So here we are. But yeah, we came out here, and I was really afraid of leaving our church. So I met Rob and we started dating, and I thought, okay, now I really want this, because if we get married, like, I want a Catholic family. I want all the kids. I want this partnership with this man who is obviously in for it for a partnership and not just to be this dude who wants a wife. And I now was at a point where I felt and knew this it was time. So I signed up and they gave me a sponsor, and she was tremendous. And I loved it so much. The next year I was like, I want to be a sponsor. I learned stuff like why we genuflect and what crossing your forehead, lips, and chest means. Mm-hmm. I am 35 years old and I just learned what
that's
that means.
Right.
So it's.
Did you have a hard time getting adapting to this our parish though here?
No, I loved it.
Really?
Yes. It was smaller, but
God bless you.
And okay, I will say there were bits and pieces. Like we had a handbell choir that was once a month at our other church, and it was big, and it was beautiful and it was lovely. And but I came here and it was hard to adjust because music ministry was not huge and it was a big thing there. And there wasn't, there were little things that I really, really missed about our church. But I think a part of it was, like, we got married there. It's where we started going. And we got married and left. And it was hard to leave that behind. But it was Christ our King.
Oh.
And Christ the King here. And I thought, okay, we're going to be fine. We're going to be all right. And one of the ladies that was on the core team for RCIA, her nephew lives in Boise, so she was like, you're gonna love Idaho. So it was like, I just still had these little connections where I knew that it was gonna be okay. And also getting into the school, because that was another thing. I was teaching in a public school, I was kindergarten, and I was like, nope, we're not doing this again. And I was talking to my mom about it, and she said, what about a Catholic school? There's got to be plenty around there. And then my dad in another conversation said, you ever thought about teaching in a parochial school? Okay, here's your sign. So I just went. I dropped off applications. I got called for a sub job. And a week later, I was teaching like a trimester in place of this woman who had to be out on medical leave. And then I got to know the priest. And then we met the bishop. And then it was like, I am part of a parish, an active, living, breathing part of a parish right now. So when I came out here, I'm like, where are the Catholic schools at? I looked at a Google map and I thought, there's one Catholic school.
Yep.
In the entire town.
Yep.
Like four in Charleston.
Right.
Yep.
Elementary schools, you know? Mm-hmm. So getting in the school was another way to like adapt to, because then you get to just know people and you know ministries because you're in one. And then that made it easier to adapt, because then I knew people by default because I was in I knew families. So it made it easier. I love it. It's a community. It's a pretty good community. I don't know if that answered your question. I went like five minutes out and tried to come back.
No, that, you know, I just, well, first of all, you got to remember I'm a convert.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Pope St. John Paul II is the only Catholic church I know.
Yeah. Right?
It's it. It's the only church I really know. So I'm always curious what it would be like to have a different experiences in different parishes. But, you know, on the flip side, some of the words you used and the way you described, I know people and they know me and there's that connection. And so that is so important for me for a church. But, you know, I always wonder what it's like coming from a different place to a uniquely, this is probably because of my lack of experience, right? Mm-hmm. I consider a parish to be unique in its flavor and in the way it does things and the way
I think it I'd works. Agree with that.
But then maybe every parish is unique, so I don't know.
But I also feel like I personally feel like as a parish we have something to prove to the community at large. And that might be a personal thing to me that I don't need to say out loud. But
Christina's nodding your head big time. What do you think on that one?
I'm trying not to talk. My voice is off. I'm bad for people listening. I think that
we're not taken serious. It doesn't feel like we're taken seriously.
The great thing about being Catholic sometimes is that you don't have to go out there and ring a bell and hold a sign to get people's attention that you know what you're doing. You just are what you are, and they can accept it. The fact that, you know, this church has been around since
the beginning of G.
But I think in this community, we have to, don't you dare. We have to carve a space for ourselves and make sure that our kids feel strong have a good foundation, or surviving in this community is difficult. And it's not necessarily the majority of, you know, being LDS, but it can also be that we have a very large evangelical group in town as well. And that appeals to young people because there's a lot of music and fun and parties and dancing, you know, and then the other side is that's where everybody is.
Right.
And what we have to offer is just what we feel is the truth, right? We just want to say there shouldn't be any bows and ribbons and horns to make your, you know, to make you feel good about
it. To legitimize your belief.
Right?
Yes.
But I do think that we do feel that we have to prove something.
I remember my first Ash Wednesday in this town. I got so many looks, and then the checkout lady was like, you have something on your head.
Right.
And I do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That was I was trying not to have the preconceived notions and like the prejudices in my head about like I'm walking into this community where there's one Catholic church.
Right. All right. We had a little, technical. Of course, the dog decided to interject again, but we can't, you know, she's part of the podcast. She's paid staff.
We pay her way too much.
Right. But going back to that, right? I guess I forgot where we were talking there. Sorry, but
you mentioned Ash Wednesday.
She went to the grocery store and the lady commented with the got something on for her.
Was that this year?
No, it was our first year here.
So when I was probably in my seventh year teaching, I had the opportunity finally to go to Mass before, because I had a moment in the morning.
Yeah.
And I came to school with the ashes on my head, and I sat with a group of teachers in a meeting, and one particular lady, she said, I don't think you should have that on your forehead. And I said, well, it's Ash Wednesday. I went to church. I think I'm okay. And she said, well, you're teaching kids to, I don't know how she framed it. I'm like, I'm not teaching them anything. And I'm wearing the ashes on my head because it's Ash Wednesday. It's no different from your CTR ring and what you're wearing under your shirt. And she got really mad at me for even mentioning them. And I'm like, but we all know because you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I just don't know why that's okay.
Or the BYU flag.
It's a part of your portrayal of your faith. Why can't I portray mine?
Right. And it's fine to wear, you know, the ashes to school. I mean, she just, it was new for her and she didn't know how to express it. And kids, they don't want to come to school with them. It's rare because they know people will look at them and ask questions. And some kids just don't like to be pointed out, period, right? It doesn't matter. They could have the coolest new shirt because they went to a concert, but they might not want to wear it because they don't want anybody to say anything. So personality, but I've had, whereas I grew in a town that everybody had the ashes on their forehead.
Same here. It was very strange. I used to work at a Fuddruckers. Do y'all remember that?
Oh, yeah.
In high school, I worked there. And I remember thinking, first Friday of Lent, like, well, it's not very, it's not going to be real busy. I couldn't believe the line out the door. So I was in my own little Catholic world. Because apparently everyone eats hamburgers except the Catholics. I remember being so stunned. Like, what is happening right now? Mm-hmm. John Paul II, the fact that it's... that the parish is John Paul II, that was huge for me because I've had a connection to him. He's just always been on my heart and in my mind because he was my pope growing up. And I remember reading about him and I remember the day he was shot. It's one of those, it's just like grew up with him, you know, and my parents admired him and, was just a kind of a figure that I always wanted to know more about and be near. And then when I found out it was John Paul II, well, that's cool. And then we went home for Christmas and we went to the John Paul II Institute. I don't know if that's what it's called, but it is with the Basilica on CU. Rome. And in D.C.
I've seen that. I haven't been there, but I know what you're talking about.
It's amazing. It's really, really neat. They have the Luminous Mystery Shrine, and they have a vial of his blood, and go in, and there's throughout you can see artifacts of his. I mean, we saw his skis and his razor and his hiking boots, and it was really, really, really neat. So we're just doing all this, and we go in it was Robin and I with my brother and sister-in-law. They were living in Northern Virginia at the time, and they said, "Let's go see this. It'd be awesome." So we went, and it was just fascinating. So we're in this chapel, and we're just praying. And this is, I mean, the trying to start a family, years and years and years and years and years. And we went through so much there. And then we were going to adopt Jacob, and then his mom changed her mind about 3 weeks before he was born. Okay, so that was in May. Mm-hmm. So this is now New Year's Eve. We're downtown in D.C., and I'm sitting in this John Paul II chapel, and I'm thinking, now is the time to pray for this child, like, for something. Like, you are in the right spot, and this is the family, and, here is where you need to ask it all that you want. So I did, and I was like, please just help us start a family. Like, what do we need to do? What avenues? Like, what do I need to let go of? What do I need to pursue? What do I need to do better? That was December 31st. We left town on the 1st. We got home on the 2nd. Went back to school to work at Holy Rosary on the 3rd of January. I got all my kids set up. I was working in the computer lab at the time. Got them all set up and settled, and I saw my phone. I got a text from Jacob's birth mom that says, "Will you call me when you get a chance?" She called me and she said, "I can't do it. Do you want?" So now we have Jacob.
Yes.
Fast forward to June. We have him. He is officially ours. I'm sitting in Mass. Oh,
by the way, what year are we talking?
2017.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sitting in Mass at Holy Rosary, and I just... It was during the Eucharistic prayer, and it hit me like a ton of bricks that John Paul II was our intercessor for
that. Oh, yeah. Right?
I hadn't even thought about it. I mean, I knew it was all weird and bizarre, and I knew that it had to do with prayer, but I...
But you were traveling, and you were, thinking about just where you normally do your prayer.
And yeah.
And then chaos, school starting, everything come back.
Yes. And then we're, getting all the home study and everything put together. And so, and then we get him and we bring him home. And then he's not a normal child, not your typical baby. So we're just trying to keep our head above water. I'm sitting in Mass, and I thought, it was almost like he said to me, "Welcome." You know, and not because he wasn't that way, but I just this overwhelming feeling of great. Oh my gosh, that was him.
Yeah, right.
And of course I burst into tears because that's what I do. Right. And I went up to get communion, and when I came back on the left side of Holy Rosary, where it's now a Divine Mercy print, but it used to be John Paul II hanging up there on that wall. And I've since seen that same photo, and I know that he's not looking at, he's not even like looking, but when I looked up, it was like he was staring at me. So I just lost it all over again. So that's been the big, big, big one. Right. And then just all of the things leading to now we have Bernadette, and she's Bernadette Louise, and Louise after her birth mom's middle name and grandmother. And then I found out that Louise was St. Bernadette's mom's name. All these little things that I'm learning are not little, because it's just life. Yeah. It's Holy Spirit. It's,
oh yes. It's everything has a reason.
It absolutely does. And I am trying to remember that understanding is not owed to us.
No.
It's really hard some days. You just do the best you can. And then I heard that Pope Benedict quote about we're not made for comfort, we're made for greatness.
Right.
I'm like, this is going to be great. And you gave a talk at Confirmation Retreat 1 year that has been my like jumping off point for really getting into John Paul II and Cup of Grace and making friends and connections, really? And relationships. Get out of the boat.
Oh yeah. Get out of the boat.
I went home and wrote that on my mirror, and it stayed there until we left in July of 2020. And moved soon. We moved houses, yeah. So I tell people, I had a friend move here, and I was like, just get out of the boat, dude. Get out.
Yeah.
But don't take your eyes off Jesus.
Or you'll fall.
You know, that, yeah, that's such a wonderful little passage, a scripture, story, right? That, that's it. We have to get out of the boat. Mm-hmm.
That's one of his favorites.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I got to preach that again one of these days.
Yep.
Well, I mean,
you don't get to recycle, Jesus.
I've not recycled, but, you know, if I ever run on that.
Tell it to a new audience. It was all teenagers.
Right. Well, thank you.
By the way, the name Bernadette, I love, and I've told you before, and my mom is moving here, and I know when she gets established and comes to church, if you guys are there at the same time, yes. I'm going to make her come over, because she doesn't believe other people will ever want to name their kid Bernadette.
Oh, I love it.
And so I think she'll be pretty, I haven't told her about it, but I think she'll be pretty excited. What? There's a kid named Bernadette? Yes. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Yes.
That was Rob's idea. I had Stella Joan in my head after our grandmothers, and Stella, the star of the sea, and all. So Rob said, what about Bernadette? And I thought, we can do that. And then when I saw her, I knew.
Isn't that
Bernadette.
Funny?
And now it's she's such a Bernadette.
Yes.
Anyway, and there's so many stories like that.
Well, we don't.
I could go on.
You know, but I don't know. I guess I'm struggling a little bit. I kind of want to wrap this up a little and get you back to your babies and Rob and that thing.
But it is a great story. But your story about your children is wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
But Katie, I do want to just tell you thank you for sharing. I one of the interesting things, right, is at some point in your life, early on in your life, that recognition that something was missing. And, you know, and whatever wisdom and whatever, you know, the testimony to your parents raising you the way you did in the household and your grandma example, right, is that you couldn't get away from the fact what was missing was your relationship with God and relationship with His church. And so, I mean, that's a beautiful testimony. Beautiful. So thank you.
Thank you.
I got a cough. I can't quit. So that apparently means we need to go. Just want to say a quick thanks to Katie.
Thank you for coming. This was fun.
Yes. Nice. I love talking with you guys.
Yeah, and we need to do it more.
Yes.
And with that being said, we just want to encourage everyone to follow us.
And eat more cake.
And eat more cake.
Yes, ma'am.
Eat more cake.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.